So those of us who have had enough Yom Kippur, as we just remarked, the question really is, today is, second day is the Yantav Sheni of Yom Kippur. So why do you have to wait an extra year to celebrate Yom Kippur? You could have started again last night, right away, and celebrated an extra day of Yom Kippur. All the other holidays. All the... What?
You have to eat. You have to be able to eat.
Why?
You can't fast 2 days in a row.
You can't?
I think most
healthy people could survive a two-day fast.
That the halakha? No, but you set it up so it won't ever be.
What do you mean? If Rosh Hashanah is 2 days, if Sukkot is 2 days, why can't Yom Kippur be 2 days?
Because you can eat on those days, that's why.
Okay, but I'm saying most healthy people could survive.
Survive is the right word.
Yeah.
Why did they do that?
Okay, I'll explain. So 2 days Yom Kippur. So fundamentally, really, you should celebrate 2 days Yom Kippur. Right. 2 days Rosh Hashanah, 2 days Yom Kippur, 2 days Sukkot, 2 days Shmini Atzeres. Yeah. You should celebrate 2 days Yom Kippur. However, even in the times where the shluchim went out, when the messengers went out to inform people which day was Rosh Chodesh, they did not celebrate 2 days Yom Kippur because, danger. Mm-hmm. Because even though many people, you know, could survive a two-day fast, 2 days, 2 full days without eating or drinking, it was considered dangerous to impose this on a mass scale.
Okay.
There's a story, in fact, in the Talmud Yerushalmi about someone who indeed was stringent upon himself to fast 2 days Yom Kippur, and he died.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, it was not simply for the sakana. Fundamentally, like I said, you should keep 2 days Yom Kippur, but since, at least in those times.
But the reason for keeping 2 days of the other ones isn't because you're really supposed to keep 2 days, it's because of the uncertainty of which
Right, so I'm talking about even when the shluchim went out and there was uncertainty, they did not keep 2 days, and they also relied on the fact that Elul was, there was a principle already established that Elul was extremely rarely, it was unheard of for Elul to be 31 days. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Rosh Chodesh to be 31 mm-hmm. days after the previous, it was unheard of to be a Chodesh Milber, mm-hmm. so people could more or less guess when Rosh Hashanah what really was. Again, the vast majority of years Rosh Hashanah would have fallen on that day. So therefore, on a deraisa level, you wouldn't have to be choshesh, you wouldn't have mm-hmm. to be concerned that there was that Rosh Hashanah was really the next day, and therefore Yom Kippur would be a day after the day after you calculated. So why do we keep 2 days of the other Yom Tovim?
Why should it?
So, yeah. So if that's the principle, then 2 days of Rosh Hashanah.
Okay, so 2 days Rosh Hashanah, 2 days Sukkah. So you have some sort of suffix, and on Pesach you really had a suffix, you know, which day was the correct day of Pesach. So for those days, so 2 days of feasting, you know, sometimes it's hard to gorge ourselves so much for the 2 days of Yantif, but the Chachamim decided that in order to cover all our bases, it was correct to impose the 2 days of Yantiv to make sure you got it right, especially Pesach. You have an Isser Karis if you eat chametz. There's no sakana involved over here, and perhaps some people even like it, getting off work 2 days. Some people complain that they don't have enough vacation days to cover Yantiv. Some people like...
There was a time when I sure didn't.
Some people like the idea of spending 2 days in Yantiv. So, I mean, personal taste doesn't matter here, but the idea was that it was no problem per se observing 2 days of the other holidays, whereas there was a problem with imposing the 2 days of Yom Kippur on a mass scale, because some people, like we were discussing last week, that the old nowadays people are quick to want to get out of Yom Kippur. But in the olden days, you know, I remember when I was reading the biography of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I had a picture of him on Erev Yom Kippur already dressed in his white coat. And they don't wear kittels in Yerushalayim. The real Yerushalmi people, they wear like a white bekesha. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he was already dressed in his white coat and his shtreimel, and he's going around last things before the fast. What's he doing? It was a picture of him in front of a random apartment building coming down the stairs. It said, what had he been doing? He was visiting an elderly person and begging that person not to fast. Because in the olden days, people were totally distraught at the idea of having to eat on Yom Kippur. And they said, if the Chachamim would say, you know, everyone has to fast 2 days Yom Kippur if you're healthy, but those who have a slight illness should only fast the first day Yom Kippur. So people are going to think to themselves, you know, I'm very religious. I'm not going to be lenient with myself. I'm going to fast 2 days Yom Kippur, and therefore there'll be a sakana, a danger on a mass scale. So never impose 2 days of Yom Kippur.
Now, there's an article written by Rabbi Yair Hoffman,
Yeah.
Who said, in fact, there's a very big problem today. And you have to emphasize to people that it's much of a mitzvah to eat on Yom Kippur if the
doctor
tells you so.
In certain circles. Certain circles still maintain this old mentality. But you have to machmir on Pikuach Nefesh the same way that you're machmir on Yom Kippur. So on the other hand, an exemption from fasting Yom Kippur is not hefker, just because... just because someone has a little headache doesn't mean that you're allowed to not to fast on Yom Kippur.
Well,
but on the other hand,
25. But if they're not
okay, right. Obviously, depending on the circumstance, right?
There's like a certain age where things start to go kind of downhill in terms of stress.
Right. So you have to consult with a rabbi and a doctor and figure out whether, whether you're allowed to eat. Fine. So, however, so that's why the Chachamim never imposed the idea. Because the vast majority of time Yom Kippur was on the earlier day, and because they didn't want to impose 2 days because of the sakana, but on a conceptual level, you really should keep 2 days Yom Kippur. So for that reason, there are stories in the Gemara, not of people, there's the story in the Yerushalmi of somebody who died, but there's a story in the Talmud Bavli also of people who were stringent on themselves and fasted 2 days Yom Kippur, because they said, we can do it. I know I can do it, and
So they would repeat the davening of the other. I mean, what do you daven the second day? Same thing.
There's no record of what they used to daven in the times of the Gemara, the people who fasted 2 days Yom Kippur. That's an excellent question. However, there is a discussion that this idea was resurrected after the Gemara had petered out for a while. Was resurrected by certain segments of the Chassidei Ashkenaz, the 12th, 13th century German pietistic movement. So they revived this idea of the fasting. Those who are really, really pious, again, there were sure the very great Rabbanim from that period who did not fast 2 days in Kippur, obviously, but there were certain points in time that people felt that, obviously it was Yechidim, mamish, single people in every generation. Rabbis that they were, but pious people, fine. So they revived this idea that it's a pious practice to fast 2 days Yom Kippur. So it says that sometimes when they had a minion, again, implication being the vast majority of time, there was not a minion in one town of people who were doing this, a fasting 2 days Yom Kippur, but said sometimes when they had a minion, they used to conduct the services of Yom Kippur, again, the same way the first day Yom Kippur, the second day Yom Kippur as well. So that's questionable, because if there's no takana to keep 2 days Yom Kippur, then they never instituted the tefillos, and you can't be makel on things like wearing tefillin. You go the second day without wearing tefillin. But they said, maybe they didn't impose it formally, but you see, even in the Gemara, there are people who used to keep 2 days. Again, there's no record as to what they davened and if they wore tefillin or not. But they said, since there is a chalos of 2 days Yom Kippur, so if we want to do it, so we can keep 2 days Yom Kippur. However, this practice nowadays, besides very, very, very few people, I only happen to know someone personally, but if I didn't know this person personally, I would say that this practice is completely unheard of nowadays, to keep 2 days Yom Kippur. I already said the Chai Adam. Yes, the Chai Adam says that this is totally unheard of. He's not going to discuss all the aspects of keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, because it's totally unheard of. Nobody ever heard of anyone fasting 2 days Yom Kippur. And the Poskim point out, the Vilna Gaon has this on his commentary in Shulchan Aruch, but I think earlier Poskim say this as well. They say, push it. They say, think about it. Why do we keep 2 days Yantif in general?
Because it was
do we have a doubt as to what day day Yantif really is?
What if you're in like the Far East and there's a question about the international dateline, as there was like World War II? And wasn't there a question then of keeping 2 days?
Oh, in the international time. So then there were people who kept 2 days Shabbos, but then you had a problem with Yom Kippur. Yeah, that's why they really had to decide, because they were this issue of fasting 2 days. Mm-hmm. So there were some people at that time who fasted 2 days Yom Kippur for that reason.
They would just do the Shabbos davening over again, and it's 2 days.
No, they picked one day that they kept as the Iker Shabbos, and then the other day they would just refrain from halacha, but they would do weekday davening and put on tefillin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Fine. So, but there were people who fasted 2 days Yom Kippur even then, but that was the famous thing that they sent a telegram to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish told them that they should keep Yom Kippur on what's Sunday in Japan. Mm-hmm. The Shabbos is really Sunday, so Yom Kippur was really a day later than they thought it was. But that's the international dateline. That's a specific thing.
But
so my.
Means, But international dateline or not, where you can talk about time zones. I mean, wherever you are, it's what day it is. No,
there's a big machlokas about that, actually.
It goes by the time, right? It goes by the fast and Shabbos and whatever. It goes by sunrise and sunset here in New York, not by Israel.
Okay.
Right, obviously, but the where the date changes is a big shaila. In other words, that just because it's called Saturday here doesn't mean it's Shabbos.
Yeah, I know. And every once in a while you get these idiots with the calendar reform and, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Okay, fine. So 2 days, fine. Yeah. So why do we keep 2 days? So why does it perhaps not make sense to keep 2 days Yom Kippur nowadays? So why do we keep 2 days Yontif in general?
Basically, we're keeping the traditions of the, whatever it was.
100%. Do we really have a doubt nowadays as to which day is Yontif? The real day of Yontif is the first day of Yontif. Mm-hmm. If there were a Sanhedrin with Smicha and you got proper Hasra warning and everything, let's say you did Melacha on the first day of Yontif here in New York. The Melacha on the first day of Yontif and you got proper Hasra and then they brought you to the Sanhedrin. What would be your punishment? Malchus. Daraisa lashes. If you did malacha on the second day of Yontif, what would be your punishment? Makas mardus. The rabbinic lashes, not the daraisa lashes. So there is, we know that on a daraisa level, you just have to keep. I mean, the first day of Yontif is Yontif, and the second day is just a carryover from the minag from when there was a doubt as to which day was Yontif. The Vilna Gaon and others point out that all the stories in the Gemara of people keeping 2 days Yom Kippur was in a time where there was a real doubt as to which day was Yom Kippur.
Right.
So it made sense, not on a mass scale, but on an individual scale, maybe for some people to privately keep 2 days Yom Kippur. But nowadays, we know which day is Yom Kippur. We celebrate Yom Kippur on the right day. And the 2 days Yom Kippur is just based on the minag, are parroting the minag of our ancestors. And was there ever a minag of our ancestors to keep 2 days Yom Kippur?
No.
Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's the lamdasha reasoning as to why nowadays we do not have to keep 2 days Yom Kippur, because there was never a minag to do so, and we're not actually in doubt as to which day is Yom Kippur. And of course, most of us have never heard of anyone keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, and judging by our address and by the fact that we're recording this year, we're not keeping 2 days Yom Kippur right now either. Fine. So the question arises also, I was looking actually a little bit more into the issue of Eilat. Mm-hmm. So it's, although there were poskim who suggested you keep 2 days, others say no, you keep 1 day in Eilat because it's, you don't go by the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, you go by the borders of Eretz Yisrael, also because the Shluchim could have gotten there faster. Mm-hmm. And because you go by maybe the borders of Eretz Yisrael as conquered by Olim Mitzrayim, the Jews who came up from Egypt, and even though those borders don't have Kedusha Eretz Yisrael nowadays in terms of Trumas Umaisris necessarily, in terms of Shvius maybe, but therefore Yontif Sheni, so maybe those borders are in effect, so therefore you do not have to keep 2 days Yontif in Eilat. So the question is, so there aren't that many from Jews in Eilat, so it's not much of an issue, but those that are there only keep 1 day. So the question really arises, let's say there's a from Jew who lives in Eretz Yisrael and wants to spend a Pesach, whatever, any holiday, in a hotel in Eilat. So of course the poskim would discuss such a scenario and say, you shouldn't go to Eilat because besides the issue of leaving Eretz Yisrael, there's so much pritzas there and who knows what's going on, don't go to Eilat. But if you go to Eilat, question should arise, should you keep 2 days Yontif because you're visiting a place where they're really supposed to keep 2 days Yontif? And we know that the rule is that people who come from Eretz Yisrael to, say, America, how many days of Yontif do they keep?
One.
Oh, not exactly.
Okay.
So, according to the basic psak, which we'll discuss a little bit more in a few minutes, is that you keep 1 day Yontif in terms of the tefillin and in terms of the davening and in terms of Kiddush and Havdalah. But you're not allowed to do malacha. You're not allowed to do malacha, according to many poskim, even in private. Mm-hmm. Even if you're alone in your room and locked in a lightproof room. Reb Moshe Feinstein says, actually, that an Israeli person in America, on Yontif Sheni, is allowed to turn on the lights. because people, that's not even considered to be something in private, because people just assume that it was turned on by a Shabbos clock of people looking through the window. Other poskim don't agree with that. They say you're not allowed to turn on the lights at all.
The question, though, that maybe turning on lights, the ikra of that, maybe not be, maybe not be a melacha, but turning them off definitely is, or something like that. I think the Rav Soloveitchik.
Yeah, but the...
Which is why I said you can't, which is why you couldn't matir it, because people would obviously do both, you know.
I mean, there were poskim who said they are allowed to turn on incandescent light bulbs on Yontif, but nowadays not all bulbs are incandescent, and also most are not actually. Mm-hmm. And also, people aren't going to think that nowadays it's nobody turns on lights on Yontif anymore.
Still electricity.
Right. Okay, so he says that the reason even if fundamentally you should keep 2 days Yontif in a lot, if you go visit a lot over Yontif. Mm-hmm. An Israeli, for sure, can only keep 1 day, because even if fundamentally you're supposed to keep 2 days in Eilat, Lemaisa, the Jews living there, only keep 1 day, so it's not going to raise any eyebrows if you are doing malachis on the the second day of Yontif. Okay. So regarding visiting other places on Yontif, so there's a fundamental famous machlokes, about the way you look at it. So the normative psak is that it goes by where you normally live and where you intend to go back. So there's a whole discussion in the beginning of the fourth parak of Maseches Pesachim where it discusses minhagim and, you know, when you have to put on a show for other people if the minhag of a certain place is not the minhag that you're used to. It's a very complex discussion. But the question... So the normative approach is that it goes by where you normally live and where you intend to go back. So, if a person lives in Israel and comes to America for an internship, something, for 1 year, it's very clear they absolutely plan to go back to Israel. No question of settling in America. That person is fundamentally going to keep 1 day of Yontif even in America. And the other way around, if you live in Chutz Laretz and then you go to Eretz Yisrael, even if it's for a somewhat extended period of time, if it's for sure that you are just coming to visit and you're going back, then you keep 2 days of Yontif even in Eretz Yisrael. This is quoted by the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef, in one of his tshuvas in Avkas Rochel, says when he's discussing what a visitor from outside Israel should do visiting Israel on Yontif, he says, not only do they keep 2 days Yontif, they make public minyanim of the second day Yontif davening. Why that's allowed is a little bit unclear, but he says, nevertheless, none of the rabbis ever protested this, and everybody knows that people coming to visit Eretz Yisrael for Yontif keep 2 days of Yontif. However, you're going to settle in a new place, then you keep the minhagim of that place. If someone makes aliyah, you keep 1 day Yontif. If somebody, I have cousins who grew up in Eretz Yisrael, moved here for who knows business opportunities. They've been living in New York for 40 years. So obviously,
wait. So you mean there'd be an objection to the 2 day Yom Tovim in Yerushalayim? The minyanim that meet on the second day.
Lemaisa, not. They're not supposed to do it. The poskim say they're not supposed to do it extremely publicly. Like you should do it in a side room of a shul or in a separate shul that's dedicated specifically.
I mean, there are some shuls that don't do it, I think.
Right. It's not so pasha, but the poskim say that's always been the
minhag. You're dancing in the street in Simchas Torah, for example.
Well, they're doing that anyway because they keep 2 days Simchas Torah, not halachically, but they do what's called hakafot shniyot.
Oh, really?
That the people...
Yisruchah.
Really?
Yeah, that there's a thing in Israel that they dance with the Torah on what second day Shmini Atzeres, so Simchas Torah in Chutz Laretz, because they want to have live music and they want to make it real epic. They didn't get enough of the hakafos the first day, so they have to do it again on the second day. That's true.
This practice
was instituted in the... It was actually instituted by the father-in-law of Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, the former chief rabbi. So his father-in-law was named Rabbi Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, and he was a chief rabbi of Tel Aviv at the end of his life. He was a rabbi of certain neighborhoods in Tel Aviv earlier. So he instituted this practice as a gesture of solidarity with the Jews in Chutz La'aretz leading up in the years leading up to the Holocaust.
Wait, but if you're actually, you know, from Chutz La'aretz,
yeah,
and you're privately, you know, davening Simchas Torah in your own Chutz La'aretz, you can't go out and join one with all the loudspeakers and the
You could join, but you're not doing anything.
Right. I guess that's not okay.
And what happens in Shmini Atzeres when there is this Minchah of eating in the Sukkah, and in Israel it would not be the case.
It's never the case in Israel.
Right. That's an excellent question. So what we're talking about is the fact that normally 2 days Yontif doesn't detract from anything. Mm-hmm. So the day after Rosh Hashanah is a weekday. Mm-hmm. The day after the first day Sukkot is a Chol HaMoed. The day after the first day Pesach is Chol HaMoed. The day after the last day, the seventh day of Pesach is a weekday. Mm-hmm. Or Shabbos, whatever, regular day, not Pesach. So it doesn't detract from anything to keep 2 days of Yontif. But however, you have a problem when you have the transition from the seventh day of Sukkot to Shmini Atzeres. So Shmini Atzeres, you don't eat in the Sukkah, but on the seventh day of Sukkot, you're supposed to eat in the Sukkah. So even though we now know that Shmini Atzeres is on the right day on a Deraisa level, so nevertheless, the practice is instituted as if we are not sure whether it's right now the seventh day of Sukkot or the Shmini Atzeres. So therefore, you go with Chumrah in both directions, and you have to eat in the Sukkah. Some sleep in the Sukkah also. You have to dwell in the Sukkah, shall we say, on Shmini Atzeres and Chutz La'aretz. But you treat it as Yantiv Shmini Atzeres.
But without a bracha,
right. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are different shittas in the Gemara about whether you have to, whether you make a bracha, but the normative psak, as seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara in our Girsa, and is the psak of Kimat all the Rishonim, is that you dwell in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, but you do not make a bracha, right?
This is open and shut. It's an open Gemara, the conclusion of the Gemara.
So the question is why are they lenient in dwelling in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres and Chutz La'aretz? Because a few reasons. Some say because the conclusion of the Gemara is not really so clear-cut. Okay, but all the Rishonim Paskin that way. Whatever. Some say the Yerushalmi says that even in Chutz La'aretz you don't have to eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. Some say that the Gemara is saying that you should eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres was only because in those times in Babylonia and Eretz Yisrael the weather was very nice. So it wasn't a slap in the face to the Yontif of Shmini Atzeres to eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, and it wasn't a big deal. But nowadays that it's so freezing cold, not so cold, in the Europe, it's in certain places it was very cold on Sukkot. So nowadays you don't, this conclusion of the Gemara does not apply, because nowadays it's a real slap in the face, because when you sit in a Sukkah, it's obvious that you're doing it because you're concerned that it's still Sukkot, and not because you just feel like eating in the Sukkah. But most poskim hold that it's a takonas chachamim. So just like any yantiv sheni, it's a takonas chachamim that you have to eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres because you're concerned that it's the previous day.
What about Israel? It's Israel. That's a real problem.
Oh, that was the background to answering your question. Oh, by the way, just before we leave this, some people say that that's another reason why we don't keep 2 days Yom Kippur. Because keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, why? Because there's a mitzvah to eat the day before Yom Kippur. Yes. So, and it's like the being lenient not to eat in Sukkah and Shmini Atzeres, because it's a slap in the face to the Yontif Shmini Atzeres. So you can't keep 2 days Yom Kippur, because if you keep the second day as Yom Kippur, that means there was a mitzvah to eat the day before that you didn't do. So you're it's not so free and clear that it's just nice to have an extra day of Yom Kippur. It's a real slap in the face to the day before Yom Kippur. Oh, in the opposite direction. Well, okay, fine. So what about in Eretz Yisrael? Does someone who's visiting Eretz Yisrael from Chutz La'aretz have to dwell in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres? So according to most poskim, you do. Because that's part of the minhag of Yontif Sheni. So you have to dwell in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. So remember when I was in yeshiva, when I would eat by Israeli people on Shmini Atzeres, so they would passel part of the sukkah, and they would keep some of the sukkah kosher, and they would have the guests from Chutz La'aretz sit in the part of the sukkah that was still kosher, and they would have the they themselves would sit in the part of the sukkah that was pasul. The idea is because if you're Israeli, so you don't want to lend the impression that you're doing bal tosif, that you're sitting in the sukkah for an extra day more than required. Again, if you're just really just doing it because you feel like the sukkah, so it's not a problem with bal tosif, but they want to just make an extra gesture to make sure that nobody gets confused.
Well, technically, wouldn't it be enough to not say Leisha B'Sukkah?
You don't do it anyway.
Oh, Shmini Atzeres.
Right, Shmini Atzeres.
Okay,
right.
Shmini Atzeres.
Completely random question. We have the Shul Kiddush in the Sukkah on Shmini
Atzeres.
Yes.
The normative psak in Chutz La'aretz, in all Jewish groups, Teimanim, Svardim, Ashkenazim, the normative psak, unless you have a very clear minhag, otherwise, even then, Rav Soloveitchik used to pass in for people they should change their minhag. I wouldn't be so quick to do that, but the normative psak, again, is that you would dwell in the sukkah completely on Shmini Atzeres, with or without sleeping. I mean, a lot of people don't sleep in the sukkah anyway. Yes.
That
you eat both night and day of Shmini Atzeres.
Hasidim don't.
In the sukkah. Certain groups of Hasidim. Not all. I think Satmar does eat. There are certain groups of Hasidim that don't eat in the sukkah. Some people eat in the sukkah only the day meal and not the night meal, because at night it was because you want to have the night meal being like the distinction between sukkahs and Shmini Atzeres. Mm-hmm. But you also, because the night meal, it was really freezing, so, you don't want to eat in a sukkah, but the day meal was a little more, had a little sun at least, so therefore they used to eat the day meal. This is all, that minhag is already brought in the Rishonim.
The overwhelming thing
some Rishonim,
is to eat in the sukkah.
Yeah. That's a normative psak.
Right.
Again, unless you have a clear minhag to the contrary, and then people also have to do some odd things which are not brought in the Rishonim, like some people make kiddush in the sukkah that eat in the house. They're not allowed because of Kiddush Makom Suda.
I've seen people do that.
It's not right. If somebody even then it's questionable, but unless somebody has a clear practice not to eat in the Sukkah in Parash Shmini Atzeres, the default should be to eat in the Sukkah Shmini Atzeres. Yeah?
Yeah, some years ago. Okay.
Anyway, but Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, I think, had this kula that if you're from Chutz La'aretz and you're in Eretz Yisrael Shmini Atzeres, you do not have to dwell on the sukkah at all, because this is somehow more kal. It's lighter halachically than the regular keeping 2 days yantif, so therefore you could rely vis-a-vis this on the shita that I am about to discuss, which is diametrically opposed to what we were saying, that it goes based on where the normal rules of minhagim, that it's governed based on where you intend to dwell and go back and all these things. That the famous shita of the Chacham Tzvi, Yaakov Emden's father, who was a very, very interesting posek. So he held, and others held like this too, that, think about it. I don't think the Chacham Tzvi puts it exactly this way, but the way others analyze the shita is as follows. Think about it this way. Our minhag to keep 2 days yantif is based on what our ancestors did 1,500 years ago when there was a doubt as to which day was the correct day of yantif. Our ancestors were maybe living in Italy, or they were living in Babylonia, and there are all these places and they had to keep 2 days yantif. Mm-hmm. But let's say one of these people 1,500 years ago happened to visit Eretz Yisrael for Yantif. How many days of Yantif would that person keep?
One
day. Because the whole institution was based on a suffix. They didn't know which was the correct day of Yantif. But now they're here in Yerushalayim. Of course they know which day is Yantif. So they have to keep one day. So the Chacham Tzvi says that if we're modeling our behavior on what people used to do in the times when there was a suffix as to which day was Yantif, so when it doesn't go by normal minhagim, like where you live normally and where you're intending to go back. It goes by where you are. Because
how was it known that somebody, say, from Babel would keep only one day if they happened to be visiting Eretz Yisrael, at the time?
It's pashut, because the whole minhag was based on a suffix. Here they don't have a suffix.
Oh, it was before basically, it was...
Before the decree of Yizaru b'minhag avaseichem should be
deichem. Before that, essentially, it was simply pragmatic.
Right, exactly.
What do you know or do you not know?
Correct, 100%. Okay. Yep. So if that's the case, then somebody visiting Chutz La'aretz has to, somebody who lives in Chutz Laaretz, when he's in Chutz Laaretz, he has to do what his ancestors did on Yantif and keep today's Yantif. But if he's visiting Eretz Yisrael, I should do what my ancestors would have done 1,500 years ago also. I'm following their minhag. I'm following exactly what they would have done in this situation. And therefore, there is this minority view that you go by where you are and not by where you're coming from. Yeah.
Is there any discussion of this, say, for example, in the Gemara, or is it when they Yonim, and when did my whole start?
Now? Yes, there is a discussion in the Gemara, but the whole question is how to interpret it. It's beyond the scope of our discussion now. It's a question whether there's a case in the Gemara of someone going from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz, but it's not clear which direction they're going. Mm-hmm. Right, because I believe the Chacham Tzvi himself only says the visitors to Eretz Yisrael, and he doesn't. Somebody else later on follows up with a Svara of, well, we don't machavek with it entirely. We don't get rid of it. You know, ignore it. First of all, there was a minag 100 years ago. Maybe less than 100 years ago also. But that was especially accepted in the Sephardi communities that if a bachur came to Eretz Yisrael to learn, then even if he was planning to go back to Chutz Laaretz, he would only keep one day. Why? Sort of with a combination of the Shita of the Chacham Tzvi, we assume that he's not really going to go back to Chutz Laaretz. Well, he's in yeshiva here, you know. Mm-hmm. He'll find a good shidduch. He'll stay in Eretz Yisrael, you know. Don't worry about it. Just keep one day antif. So poskim nowadays point out. So Chacham Avadia says that this is our accepted psak that a bachur comes to learn in Eretz Yisrael. You keep only one day antif. So the other poskim point out. But the Metzias is completely different. Nowadays, in the olden days, you came to Eretz Yisrael, you came by boat. Mm-hmm. You know, you wrote letters to your parents occasionally. Yeah. You barely heard from them, and it's very likely that if you found a shidduch here, you know, you write to your parents, oh, by the way, I'm getting married now. Mazel tov. But nowadays, so they wouldn't be able to say, what? Get back over here right now. Come back right now. We're not moving. You're not making aliyah. No.
And we're not paying for the wedding.
Right, yeah, well, so it was an issue, yeah?
Well, the Sephardim lived much closer to Eretz Israel. I mean, the Sephardim in Egypt, the Sephardim in Syria, Sephardim, all the Mediterranean basin.
Well, there's Sephardim in Morocco, there's Sephardim in Holland, they're different.
Oh, wait, but most of Sephardim, they're around...
It's closer, but not so close.
Well,
America nowadays is closer to Israel than, you know...
But when you're talking about the Ashkenazim, it was real schlep to get to Eretz Israel.
It might have been accepted in the Ashkenazi community also. I'm just saying it's mostly nowadays discussed in the Sephardi community. But nowadays, someone comes to Eretz Yisrael to learn. We have cell phones. They talk to some people that learn Eretz Yisrael. They talk to their parents every day.
Isn't that amazing?
They have email. What?
We were there for Shavuos. I mean, we had a return plane ticket. There was not a...
If you're learning for a year, though, very likely you wouldn't necessarily have a return plane ticket. But actually, I remember in yeshiva, this was, of course, the acid test of your Zionistic fervor when it came down to, second day yuntiv. You know, that separated the real, Zionists from the pretenders, there's also the question of, okay, well, who knows, maybe, in fact, you're going to change your mind. How you can be sure that you're really going
to
go back?
Yeah, but there has to be some sort of umdana de muchach, that it's very likely that you're going to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm. If you're beholden to your parents, you have no money besides what they send you. You couldn't afford a wedding by yourself. They've already started interviewing potential shidduchim here in Brooklyn. So it's very unlikely that you would completely break with them and say, I found a nice shidduch here in Bnei Brak, and I'm going to stay here and live in poverty, and, bye. It's very maybe some people will. I'm just saying it's not so likely. That's why it's not so much. That's why the normal minhag, especially among Ashkenazim nowadays, is that people who are learning in yeshiva keep 2 days a full 2 days yantif even in Eretz Yisrael following this. But if there's a suffix, then we apply the sheet of the Chacham Tzvi. We don't want to completely go against it. 100%. That if somebody's not sure whether they're staying. And I was reading a sefer recently where the author decries the practice that you have people in Kollel. They're married already. They're living in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, they think they're going back to America, but they've been living in Eretz Yisrael for 8 years. They still keep 2 full days yantif. That's ridiculous. Like, maybe you'll go back, but you at least keep a day and a half. It's, you know, people think a day and a half, that's for people who are a little less religious. But he said that. But he says that's not true. If there's a, you've been living here for so long, you might go back, but at least keep what's called a day and a half that you daven Eretz Yisrael dick and you put on tefillin, but you just don't do malacha and you don't eat chametz on the what would be the eighth day of Pesach. So that's why when there's a legitimate doubt as to whether you should be keeping 2 days, then you keep what's called a day and a half. Some poskim paskin lechatchila, since there's a sveika d'dina as to whether we paskin like the traditional minhag that's brought in the Beis Yosef or like the Chacham Tzvi, so anybody visiting Eretz Yisrael should keep a day and a half. But that's not like even that Beis Yosef said. He's telling you what they actually did. He's saying that when people came to visit Eretz Yisrael, the minhag always was that you kept 2 full days of Yonta. That's why when people are for sure just coming for a set visit and then going back, the accepted psak is that you keep 2 full days of Yontif in Eretz Yisrael.
Do you really know? Because I'm hearing.
The point is that you go based on nowadays that it is a fixed minhag, that it's been made a fixed minhag, so you go based on the normal rules of minhag rather than where you are. But like I said, it depends on each individual circumstance. You know, there's some poskim who have interest. You have all these shailas about, let's say you own a home in Chutz Laaretz and you own a home in Eretz Yisrael, whether you have to keep 2 days, whether. If you go to Eretz Yisrael for all the holidays every single year, so Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach says if you have an apartment in Eretz Yisrael and you come for all the holidays every single year, you only have to keep 1 day. Apparently, this caused family problems because Rav Yoshev, Rosh Hashanah Zalman's mechudin, was vociferously opposed to this. Like, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. No. You go by where you normally live. But, okay. So if people have shailas about whether they should keep 1 day of Yontif or 2 days of Yontif in Eretz Yisrael, so there are a lot of different factors that can come into play over here. Okay. Mitzvah Shin Beis 302. Mitzvahs Korban HaOmer Shel Seorim B'Yom Sheni Shel Pesach. Oh, just one more thing. But there is a thing, not just a day and a half, there are people, that way I can understand. It's not the normal psak, but there are some people who keep a day and a half, but there are some people who just go visit Eretz Yisrael. Oh, we do like the Chacham Tzvi. We like the Chacham Tzvi. Well, you follow the rest of his halakha given? That's very convenient. I don't... I mean, I state openly, I hate to say this, hate to put these words out of my mouth, but I strongly dislike being in Eretz Yisrael for holidays. I strongly dislike the feeling of keeping 2 days Yontif and everybody else around you is keeping 1 day Yontif. That's why there was a thing that Rabbi Willig told a very scary story of what can result from people just taking upon themselves this gula to keep 2 days. To keep 1 day at Yontif visiting Eretz Yisrael. He said there were certain people from a Orthodox Jewish city, town, very close to here. Anyway, so he said there were certain people from an Orthodox Jewish town who spent Sukkot in Eretz Yisrael, and they say, oh, we go like the Chacham Tzvi, we keep only 1 day. And, okay, so we are in Eretz Yisrael, we keep 1 day. So they flew back to America on Motzei Shmini Atzeres. They said, we keep 1 day. What's the problem? We had a chalos in Eretz Yisrael of Yontif. We keep 1 day. So we flew back. So they pulled up to their houses in taxis on Simchas Torah, the Chutzaretz. So this caused a big stir, as you might imagine. So that, first of all, it's completely us, or even for somebody who really lives in Eretz Yisrael, to do this on second day Yontif. But he said that they can lead to very serious problems, the idea of just keeping 1 day. So at the very least, we keep a day and a half, but again, the normative suck is 2 days. Yeah.
The minute that they left, say we say, Israeli airspace, the old city was Yontif, by the Chacham Tzvi, right? If it's the occasion, how could they possibly, there's no possible way you could...
They said, we hold that we're B'nai Eretz Yisrael. We had a chalos already. Mm-hmm. We made Havdalah. So,
but now they're coming.
We're done. We had a chalos chol already.
Right, but you did that in Eretz Yisrael. Now you get on the plane. And
look,
you're out.
You're right.
Okay, I mean.
Okay, that's okay. You're right. You're right. 100% 100% right.
They would say, in fact, right, the minute you are in, certainly by the time the plane lands, you know, you are now in Chutz Laaretz, no question, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's a little bit hard to understand.
Yes. It is very hard to understand. So you get these also cute chalas, speaking of a half of a day. Let's say you live in Chutz Laaretz, you go visit Eretz Yisrael for Yontif, and you're in the middle of keeping your second day of Yontif. All of a sudden, 11 o'clock in the morning of the second day of Yontif for you, you decide, you just look at an Israeli flag, you hear Hatikvah in the background, you say, this is it. This is where I belong. I have to be here. I'm not leaving again. I'm calling for my belongings to be shipped, and that's it. I'm staying. I'm moving to Israel. So what's the din? You have to. Can you stop Yontif immediately? And you can all of a sudden now it becomes a weekday, or do you have to finish the day as Yontif at least, and then the next Yontif you could keep one day of Yontif only.
Get shipped at least.
You don't really have to, but the question. Yeah. So the our cute resolution that's suggested by some poskim is that you don't daven Yontif Dik anymore. You go hear Chazaras Hashatz. You go to an Israeli minyan and you hear Chazaras Hashatz, and then you go to a Chutz Laaretz minyan and you go hear Chazaras Hashatz. You hear both the weekday and the Yontif davening. So you don't.
That'll teach people get these cute ideas. You know, thinking they're going
to get. Why does it have to be Chazaras Hashatz anyway? Just daven it.
No, the point.
You can't daven twice.
No, the point is you don't know which davening to do yourself. So you can't say.
You cannot daven twice.
You can't daven the weekday davening and the
Yontif.
Somebody
else.
Yeah, that's right. That's just what it
is. Yeah,
exactly.
It's like any time you have a suffix as to whether you're supposed to make a bracha, so you don't make it yourself. You find someone else who has to make the bracha, and they do it for you. So you don't actually recite the bracha yourself.
It's not always practical. It's not.
No, it's not. It's not. I believe that the normative approach is that you have to finish keeping the second day since you started already. But again, if the shayla actually comes up, so consult a rabbi at the time. Okay, let's try to just get started on this a little bit. Mitzvah Shin Beis 302. Mitzvahs Korban HaOmer Shel Seorim B'Yom Sheni Shel Pesach. The mitzvah of the special barley offering on the second day of Pesach. Shenakri b'yom sheni shel Pesach. On the second day of Pesach, yeser al ha-musaf shel shar yimei ha-Pesach. In addition to the korban musaf that's offered every day of Pesach, keves ben shnasu la-ola. You have a one-year-old lamb within the first year as an ola, a completely burnt offering. V'omer echad shel sorem anikra omer ha-tenufa. And one omer of barley, which is called omer ha-tenufa. One omer being the shir chala, which is approximately a little less than, I believe, what is it? It's a little over 2 liters. I always forget the exact number. I always have to look up, even though I use it all the time. Right, not the art scroll shear. I want my shear is a little bit less. Okay. Shenemar kisa voel haaretz vavei semes omer eishes k'tirchem el ha-kohen, that your first cuttings of grain should be brought to the kohen, venifes omer, and he waves it, mimacharas ha-shabbos, on the day after the Shabbos. What's the Shabbos?
Shabbos is Shavuos.
Shabbos is not Shavuos. Shabbos is
Pesach.
Right. V'targumo. Mibasar yoma tava. After the Yontif, not the Shabbos. Kilomar, and the Sefer Chen is going to go into later, that this was a dispute between the Chachamim, the Rabbinic Jews, and the other, some other sects. Kilomar b'yom sheni shel Pesach. Shariha b'Pesach, ayri b'parsha shel malam. He says, it's all talking about Pesach. It's talking about the first day of Pesach, and all of a sudden it says, and the day afterwards, Mimachar, it's a Shabbos. Shabbos doesn't always mean regular Shabbos. It doesn't mean a regular day of rest, meaning the first day of Pesach. So in the same day that you do that, you have to offer this lamb accompanying. It's also called the meal offering of the first grains. It also says, "V'im takri minchas bikurim l'Hashem." So, what's minchas bikurim? If you offer a minchas bikurim, a meal offering of first grains, l'Hashem, aviv kolui ba'ish geres karmel. It should be the first ripe grains of the spring. Aviv is, really means ripe grain, but it's also used for the time of year where the grain ripens. Roasted in fire, l'Hashem mechilta. That's how we learned the halacha, that the omer is not just raw, that it's supposed to be roasted in fire before it's turned into a mincha. It's supposed to be what's called, it's also called in the Gemara, Kimcha Davishuna. Mm-hmm. It means parched flour, not just raw flour. Kol Im Vayim Shebatah Rishus Chutz Mishlosh Hashem Chova. So what do you mean, if? You have to do it. Why does it say if you do it? So normally, if means that you're have an option as to whether to do it or not. V'zeh, except for three times, v'zeh echad mehem, another time being, what's another time where it's chova? Im kesef talveh esami. If you lend my people money, it's not if. Yeah, you have to do it. If a Jew requires a loan, you have to give it. V'amru sham, ato mer chova, o eino el rishus. Tam v'lomar takrev es minchas bikurecha, chova v'l rishus. Okay, but this case is one of the cases where it's a requirement. V'inyin ha-mincha kein, this is how you do it. She'yamevim shloshas in se'orin. They used to bring a relatively large measurement of the fresh grains. U'motziya min ha-kol yisarun echad shu menupa b'shloshas rei nofeh. So out of that, you would pick just the yisarun, or the omer, the smaller measurement, which is the shir chala, which is, you pick the finest part that was sifted with 13 sieves. Okay, going finer and finer each time, so the flour is really fine.
Just one quick one. Does barley always ripen early enough so that even when Pesach is, you know, early in the
year? Well, that's part of the reason that they would be ma'abra the year. They would create a leap year if they would see that it wasn't ripened yet. Yeah.
Barley is the first grain to ripen. I remember in Russia, mm-hmm. it was cold, right? They would leave it in the ground before it froze, before winter came.
Mm-hmm.
And then when spring come, it would thaw, and the first grain would come out.
Oh, okay.
Is that good?
Good. Mm. Nice to have people with agricultural experience while we're reading these words. They're like, okay, we imagine sort of what grain might look like. Okay. V'ashar niftev enecha l'chol adam, and the rest of it has to be redeemed, because now it's hektish. Mm-hmm. It's holy grain, so you can't just eat it before you redeem it. V'chayiv b'chala opater min ha-maisris. So it's exempt from Trumus U'Maisris because the completion of the labor, the Gemar Malacha, or the Meruach, was of the piles of grain were arranged and smoothed over when it was hektish. So it wasn't owned by any one private individual, so it's exempt from the tithes. But if you bake it now into bread after you redeem it, so it's Chayiv and Chala, because it's yours.
Yeah.
Okay. You mix this flour with a log of oil. Venosnin alt log is how much? About 300 milliliters. Venosnin all of komets levona, kishar hamenachos. And you put frankincense on it like anything else. Umanifa koen bemizrach molech umevi malu morid. Up, down, back and forth. Which is, by the way, a lot of things about waving the lulav on Sukkis. I gave, I think 2 years ago, I talked about waving the lulav on Sukkis, and a lot of the rules are comparative to how they used to wave the korbanachos in the Beis Hamikdash. Mm-hmm. And that's why the Rambam says, when he describes the lulav, he doesn't say you go all the way around like we do. He just says, like here, back, forth, up, down. And other poskim say that you don't do that because it looks like
a cross. Oh, it does.
Looks like a cross.
It does.
So that's why we now, again, some Rishonim independently of that talking about waving it to all the directions. There's nothing wrong with their waving in all directions. That's our minhag nowadays. But they say specifically not to do the way the Rambam describes of just back, forth,
but
up,
he
down.
He lived in a Muslim country.
Right. So that's why he... he didn't come up with this himself. It says right here, that's how the Kohen used to do in the basement.
Right, left, up, and down. Back,
what?
Forth, or doesn't back, forth, doesn't
no, if you do like that...
Well, yeah. You're getting sideways. Okay,
If you look at it from this... Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Fine.
Pass, maybe.
Magisho keneged chuda shel keren, marav izdromis kishar menachos. You bring it down by the corner of the altar that's on the southwestern side. The komet sumakter, you take the handful and then you put it on the mizbeach. Vashar nechal hakohanim kisharei kol menachos, and the rest can be eaten by the kohanim, just like the rest of the menachos. So